सुन रहे हो CJSF 90.1 FM, जो कि बर्नबी ब्रिटिश कोलंबिया में स्थित है.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman. Coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means. Hello, this is Teachings in the Air with Sahil Thit, a.k.a. Jerry Oldman. Today's podcast is called Run, Sahil Thit, Run. And of course, my intention is to inspire others to move, to break free of negative memories. You know, those ones that keep popping up, even though you don't want them to, because of negative situations that happened. For instance, my negative situations, all of them when I was young happened in the education system. It's a day school and residential school. As I was preparing for this podcast, I looked up the word run. And it means run. The word run means to move faster than a walk. I learned that by moving faster than a walk consistently, having a running program, let's call it that, I would forget about what I was depressed about from my past when I was out running. I didn't know, you know, at that time when I was in the dumps having the blues, that what I actually wanted was to take charge of my life, to manage my life. That's what, to have freedom. I believe that's an inherent wish for all human beings. Because of my past, the events that happened in my past to me by other human beings. When I left a residential school and I entered the world of adults, I started deteriorating. My health deteriorated, which means my mind, my body, and my spirit were weakening. So I developed bad habits. The bad habit of avoiding any and all tense, stressful situations between me and other human beings, or at times just a simple memory or a nightmare that I'd have when I was sleeping. So this podcast is about me running away, even though there was times I was running away and I was keeping still. Someone would get angry at me or say something to me, criticize me, you know. And I would be running even though I'm still in the room. So this is about me running away. And about the most important part is about my transformation and how I started running to healing and freedom. I started to actively pursue ways to strengthen my mind, my body, and my spirit. I'd learned now, and I know now, that movement is medicine. It's a medicine when you move. Your arms, your legs, your lungs fill up with oxygen, you know, and you start to sweat from moving, and you start to feel fluid, and you got full range of motion with your legs, your arms, your back, and your breathing is deep and controlled. You know, that's the lotion. You know, because if we put lotion on a sore part of our body, for instance, if you have arthritis, you get a lotion, you put it there, and it starts to feel better. And you can move. So, you know, I've learned that I must keep moving, otherwise my body will tighten up. You know, my bones are aging, you know, and I want to be mobile as long as I can. So motion is medicine. Movement is medicine. Motion is lotion. Because when I was not doing that, I felt like a phony. And I'd have this feeling of being worthless, which left me mostly depressed and lonely. So this podcast is about Sihilthit, running to healing and wellness. When I look back and I think of my introduction to running, you know, it came from my father and my uncles. You know, and as I was thinking of this, and I was thinking, oh, my father, my uncles, my grandfather, my great-grandfather were truly hunter-gatherer people. You know, they would go hunting deer, or catching salmon, you know, picking berries and roots, and they were moving about consistently. So they would tell me about their training, the training methods, how they were trained as children and youth. You know, and how strong they were. I'd hear stories about men, one man carrying a deer out of the forest on his shoulders, about men carrying 15, 20 salmon up from the Fraser River. I would struggle carrying 5, 10. But they talked about it like it was a piece of cake. So, I was, you know, the part that surprised me, it seemed to be the core of all training for every activity was running. They would tell me, you know, when you run, get up early in the morning and run. Just at daybreak, be out there running. And, you know, go bathe in the lake or the river. You know, and that seemed to be, you know, I don't know if I could say core part of the training, but I know it was an important part. Because other parts were sweat lodge, you know, at times lifting things, lifting weights, or, you know, so I heard these stories. My uncle was telling me about my great-grandfather, Patrick Old Man, that he's telling me the story that my great-grandfather he had horses. You know, we became a horse culture and they became good at it. My great-great-grandfather was a horse whisperer. They told me that he could touch his horse and it lay down and he could shoot off the back of that horse. And he could gesture to the horse that's behind him and the horse would catch up to him. I'd hear these stories. And he told me that my great-grandfather went out to catch one horse and he got on horseback and was chasing this horse. and the horse he was riding could not run fast enough, so he jumped off and caught that horse by foot. Of course I doubted my uncle, When I think about it, I say, yeah, that could be true, because they trained our men to run deer down by foot. I heard those stories, too. Another story he told me about my great-grandfather, he says when he went hunting grouse, he wouldn't have a rifle or even a stick. I learned that you can get a stick foot long and throw it, and it twirls, and it can hit the grouse. But he says, my great-grandfather would go where the grouse are. And my great-grandfather, of course, wore moccasins all his life. But he would walk to where the grouse are, because they knew the habits of all animals, because they're hunter-gatherers. But he'd go there, and he's so alert, so aware, that he'd walk through where they are. And when one took off and to fly away, he'd leap and he'd catch it by the feet and catch his supper. I go, whoa. I remember hunting grouse with a rifle. And I'd walk, and they'd go, and they'd fly off and it'd sort of get me a little panicky or startle me. Shows you the difference between my great-grandfather and me. He was hunter-gatherer. So at gatherings, I would hear hunting stories that demonstrated the strength and endurance and the speed of my ancestors. So I absorbed that teaching into my mind. I didn't practice it right away, but that importance of running. And I eventually come to love moving faster than a walk. As I was growing up too, I became an avid reader, and one of the books I was reading was about the Apache people down in the United States. And I read this story about how they were training their young men in the desert. So they get their young men, they would set a course for them. And it's 50 miles. And they would have the young men line up and they would give them water to drink. And then they would give them one more drink and they'd say, hold that in your mouth. Don't swallow it or spit it out. You're going to run the circuit, and when you come back, you're going to spit that water out at my feet. If you accidentally swallow it or spit it out, you have to come back and get another mouthful, so it's going to add to your distance. And I read that, I said, whoa, those are strong people. It's because of these stories that running became part of my life and eventually became a ceremony that helped me to survive from my past traumas from the residential school and day school. With each running goal that I accomplished, I started to know who I was and started to feel joy at another level. It felt so good to break into a sweat. In my breathing, I'm breathing through my nose. And it's just like I'm walking, even though I'm running uphill, downhill. It just felt so good. Each step, I became stronger. And I started to become who I am today. Not the victim of my past negative experiences. My trauma memories are no longer victim memories. They are teaching memories. As long as I was a victim, I was angry, I was afraid, I was depressed from day to day, year to year, till I ran to the healing journey. All those negative emotions I was feeling towards my abusers and the government of Canada and the churches, you know, did not impact them. They didn't even know I was angry and depressed. Did not bring any change, because it was all happening inside of me. Because I wasn't talking about it. Nobody knows why I was depressed, why I was afraid to make mistakes. What it was doing was making me an unhappy camper, you know, an unhealthy human being. That's what it was. So how did this whole business start of me running away? Well, it was at the residential school that I started to use running as a temporary distraction from the reality of the confinement and the control and the abuse of residential school life. We were allowed on weekend to leave the residential school grounds, not to go to town or to any houses. But across the road from a residential school, there was two mountains, Mount Peter and Mount Paul, and that we can go out running there. I hadn't started running yet, and I was sitting out by the soccer field on a Sunday. And one of my friends comes up and says, "Hey, Jerry, how about we race?" I looked at him. I'm insecure already, you know. And, it's a race. And he says, "Yeah, you see, we'll race to the top of that mountain." Points at Mount Peter. He says, "There's a trail goes all the way up to the top." And I look at him, and he says, "What we'll do is we'll take turns." He says, "We'll time each other. We'll not run together." And that was a saving grace, because I didn't want to race him side by side. He was one of our athletes, really wonderful soccer player, basketball, any sport he took seemed to be good at it and natural. So when he said, "We'll take turns," I said, "Yeah, okay." So he said, "Okay, I'll go first." And he ran, and you have to leave the residential school grounds and go across the road. I don't know the distance, but I know it was a while to run from the road to the base of the mountain. Then to run up, or to go up the mountain trail is steep. So he done it. And he comes back. "Go, your turn." I say, "Okay." So it was my first long distance run. And I started running. And that's where I learned about this positive distraction. Because the trailway, there's rocks and sagebrush. You have to watch where you're stepping. And plus, I was in a competition. So I started to move as fast as I could along this trail. I got to the base of the mountain. I started going up the trail. You know, and I could feel my breathing hard because I'm pushing myself. And I get to the top and I turn around and I look over, see the residential school, see the Thompson River, see the bridge, car bridge, and across, see the buildings. And I start running down. And I get back and I said to my friend, "Did you see me?" He says, yeah, when I saw you at the top, you turned around, you had this big smile on your face. You know, of course, he couldn't see that. But it was such a wonderful feeling. I had escaped. One of the supervisors, one of the good ones, noticed the amount of running that I was doing and others, and asked a couple of us to run in a, I believe it was a marathon in town. And he said, I'll enter you guys. So we agreed. And he says, every night now you guys are going to soak your feet in salt water. He says, to prevent blisters. And we rub Vaseline in our bodies. He says, to stop the chafing because you'll be moving, you know, for 3 or 4 hours. You know, I have very little memory of that event. Why, I have no idea. You know, I remember at one point, me and one of the others, we stopped and we were breathing. And I remember saying, yeah, we can do this. And we carried on and we done it. But I have no memory crossing the finish line or talking to anyone. It's just like, it's gone. When I left a residential school, you know, I was free of the residential school, but not of the memories. So I carried on running, living with my parents. So I'd wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go for a run. And I had this circuit. It was 14 miles. It was 7 miles one way and 7 miles back. And that was medicine. I could remember the sound of the birds waking up. It's like a choir of birds singing. The smell of the plants and the pine trees and the fir trees and the sound of my feet hitting the ground. It was at, you know, at some point in there I started to carry water in my mouth. And I carry that water in my mouth for that 14 miles, spit it out, and I get back. My uncle lived next door, would notice me, I was out running. He says, that's good, he says. Now I'm going to encourage you to get 2 rocks the size of your, that could fit into your hands and carry them when you're running and squeeze them. He says it'll strengthen your forearms, strengthen your grip. Looking back, I see that it was running that kept me reasonably stable. I could keep a job and feed the family and pay the bills. But I was still running away. The wounding of my mind and body, the memories of fear and shame, were gradually deteriorating good feelings about myself. I remember my father asking me if I was going to go to college after the residential school. I said, no, Dad, I've had enough of that system. He said, okay, you're going to leave now and go for look for work. which is a good thing he done, to make my own living. But in regards to the education, sometimes I feel regret that I did not. One of my uncles kept encouraging me. He says, I want you to go to, when you finish high school, to keep going. He says, we need lawyers, we need educated people. My grandfather's group, great-grandfather, went through that period of outlawed potlatches. You know, the threat of going to jail for not sending your kids to residential school or even being in the presence of alcohol, they grew up in that. They grew up with the words that you cannot hire a lawyer. It's against the law for you to talk about the land question. That's what they called it, the land question, land claims. When my dad was telling me that I was to go out and look for work, my brother, who had graduated residential school before me, had followed my uncle to Alaska to be a logger. And he was going to go, and he says, oh, I'll take Jerry. So I ended up going to SeaTac Airport with him, and we flew off to Sitka, Alaska. And before we left home, my dad was telling me, he says, son, when you get out there and work, when the white guys are walking, you're running. You work hard. You don't listen to people that will make fun of you because you work hard. They'll say things to you that you're sucking up to the boss and things like that. He says, you don't listen to them. You just work hard. If you become a hard worker, you'll always have a job. So I had done that. When I got to Alaska, when we were working, I would run to do the work. The rest would be walking. I remember that first day of work, it's lifting and pulling and carrying. You know, my muscles were cramping. After 10 hours of work. So I started to run after dinner to keep fit, to be fast. I wanted to be an effective and efficient worker and not to lose my job because I was an Indian. I was fast and consistent, and it was noticed by the company boss at the end of the work season. He gave me a bonus and told me he wants me to come back next season because we shut down for the winter. Too much snow in Alaska. He said that they had sent me a plane ticket in the springtime for me to come back. Sure enough, I went back again. I continued to go back to be a logger in Alaska until I fell, quite far off the ground, I don't know, 20, 25 feet, and landed in my back and chipped the fifth lumbar in my back. And it was a depressing part of my life because my back would go out. Seems I just stooped down on the ground to pick up something, no matter how heavy, my back would go out. It'd be painful. So I'm no longer a logger, so I went to be a apprentice painter, decorator.